The longest running and most trusted afternoon sports show in the state of Tennessee. This is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome to Sports Talk on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes, and we have a lot in store today. We'll talk a lot about Tennessee's upcoming opponent, the Florida Gators, as Tennessee travels to Gainesville. First road trip, first conference game for the Big Orange this season. 7 o'clock is when the game kicks off on Saturday. But we look forward to being joined by our good friend Pat Dooley. That'll be later this hour. Next hour, it's Vince Ferrara sitting in for the entire hour, hour number two of the program. And Vince and I have known Steve Russell for years. He is down at WRUF in Gainesville. We'll catch up with Steve to get his thoughts on the matchup that's coming up, the annual and renewal of the rivalry between the Vols and the Gators. We look forward to being joined by John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. That'll be at 5:30. We'll have a Tennessee football practice report with Eric Kane, comments from the Tennessee football program, all that and more today on Sports Talk.
And we're going to get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people that you can trust. So we had an opportunity to catch up with defensive line coach Rodney Garner as he met with the media today. And I asked him about the difficulty of that Florida game, given they have two quarterbacks that are really good runners, Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson, and if that's a big reason that they're such a good running team. And he said, yeah, they're a two-headed monster. And he said they're really good at what they do. Emory Jones is a seasoned veteran, and he said, and I'm not so sure the number 15 may be more dynamic, which I think he is, Anthony Richardson. And so he knows that's going to be a big challenge. He said we've got to be dialed in and detail. On Byron Young, he said he was a little bit rusty in the Tennessee Tech game. I thought he was too, but he said he thinks that he'll get better and better, and that he needs to sharpen his skill set and work on the minute details. But I was interested with Byron Young. Sometimes they would have him doing a twist or a stunt up front rather than just chase the quarterback, and I think that made him look a little bit slower. He complimented Matthew Butler, said that he is willing to take coaching. He said a lot of folks nowadays take it personally, but he doesn't. And so, and he said he wants to be good, and that's one of the reasons he has had such a nice year so far. Asked about the defensive line, he said we're moving the needle in the right direction. He said that the tackles for losses, he likes where they've been, but they have missed a number of opportunities, and the pass rush hadn't been as good as they would like. And he said they missed some sack opportunities, but he said you just can't miss those against a team like this. And he said it's kind of like climbing Mount Everest. You're not going to get there overnight. It's a process. He also said that in regard to the rotation, and he's playing an awful lot of people, he said, look, if a big man runs out of gas, there's no refueling them. You just got to get them ready for the next game. So he's rotating them in and out. So he asked Equan Blakely about that comment later. He said, oh, yeah. He said, if we run out of gas, you know, that's it. And I said, well, how many plays are in your gas tank? He said, it's a mindset. He said, as many as I can get in. But Rodney Garner talked about how you got to keep fueling the tank of these big men, and so you got to rest them. He did like what he saw out of Aubrey Solomon, who had not played in the first couple of games, and he is making some strides and playing a lot better. They need that. They need as many people up front. And Garner made no bones about it. This is the SEC. It's the best against the best. You're going against a ranked opponent. Everything ratchets up. So this is going to be a big challenge. He said Florida has elite players, elite coaches, elite scheme, and you're going to get your best when you go against a team like that. He also pointed out that Florida's only allowed 2 sacks this year, so that's going to be a challenge. Byron Young talked about being a little bit rusty and said that he was asked, was it easier for you to handle sitting out the first 2 games considering it took you years to get to this level? He said, no, it was harder. He said, I was ready to play, and for me to have to sit out, that really made it harder. He said that, you know, I'm just tickled to death to be at the University of Tennessee, but I was ready to play, and it really hit me hard that I had to sit those first 2 games out. Walker Merrill. Oh, and Byron Young said that the 2 players that he studies in the NFL, Khalil Mack, Von Miller. Not too bad.
No.
And then Walker Merrill, the true freshman receiver, talked about how he feels like what got him in the rotation early, and he was wearing a brace earlier, now it's off, but he said he finally feels like he's in a groove and he's 100%. I said, what got you in the rotation? Was it your hands, your route running, or your understanding of the offense? And basically, he suggested that it was all 3. And I said, well, what if somebody had said that after that in game three, you would lead Tennessee in receptions? He said, I'd say they're crazy. But he's done a nice job at that position. He is looking forward to going on the road. He did admit to having some butterflies initially when he played at Tennessee. But he said, I'm really excited about going to Florida. And he said, I'm blessed to be going there as a freshman. I'm excited to be in that atmosphere. I really want to experience it. And the other Tennessee players indicated the same thing. It was Jaquan Blakely that said something along those lines as well, that he's looking forward to playing in the Swamp. He also complimented Rodney Garner. He said he was asked, when did Rodney Garner set the tone? He said day one. He said basically that's it. He said it's his way or the highway. And so he set the tone right away and with demanding from these players. And Blakely said that this defensive line is way better than it was at this time a year ago. And he said that it was not a tough adjustment getting ready for Rodney Garner. And I'm thinking, well, maybe one reason why is you didn't get any coaching last year. They fired the defensive line coach after four games, and Pruitt took over, and I think he kind of handed it off to some GAs from time to time. But, Blakely said he's ready to go. This will be his third trip to Florida. And he said that what he would tell his teammates is this is going to be a hostile environment. And there will be a high level of noise. The crowd will be talking. You got to keep your composure. But and you also have to keep your mind straight when you play a team like that. So those are some of the comments that were made today by the coaches and players made available to us. All right, bouncing around with some other notes. Duke in basketball gets a number two rated player in the country, Derek Lively, a 7'1" center. That's the second top five player to commit to Duke. Rutgers has suspended both of its cornerbacks. Now, Greg Schiano's team is 3-0, but they're going to be without Max Melton and Chris Long. They used a paintball gun as a weapon. They have been charged with aggravated assault and possession of a weapon for unlawful purpose. Now, it didn't explain what they were doing with these paintball guns, but something tells me they were certainly up to no good with it. Maybe they were using it to, well, I don't want to, get, I probably shouldn't reach as to what they were doing, but I'm sure there were some people that might have seen them with these guns and thought they were real. And so that might have created an issue. Wasn't an issue for Green Bay last night. They jump on Detroit after a little bit of a slow start, 35-17. Matt LaFleur is now 7-0 after a loss at Green Bay. And Aaron Rodgers, after a loss, he's won like his last eight games with 24 touchdown passes and zero interceptions after a loss. But what did he say? He said maybe we'll get some of the trolls off our back, something like that. He threw for four touchdown passes, was 22 of 27, very efficient. Aaron Jones had four touchdowns, three receiving, his first game after his father passed away. A really outstanding performance by Jones. He had 115 total yards from the line of scrimmage. And while we're in the NFL, the Texans are going to start Stanford rookie quarterback Davis Mills on Thursday. They're still not activating Deshaun Watson, and Tyrod Taylor will not play. Ben Simmons will not report to Philadelphia's camp, and he said he's done with Philadelphia. He'll never play with Philadelphia again. It was reported that he told the owners that back in August. He is owed this year $33 million by Philadelphia, and it was reported by ESPN that he was willing to sit out the year and forego that money, but he wants a trade. That'll be interesting to see where that one goes. I don't know what his market value is going to be. Salvador Perez breaks a major league record for most home runs by a catcher. He hit number 46. Western Michigan head coach Tim Lester, who beat Pitt 44-41 over the weekend, tested positive for the virus. He is out. He will miss the San Jose State game coming up this weekend. And the Ryder Cup, so it starts on Friday. Bryson DeChambeau was asked about his relationship with Brooks Koepka. He said there is no feud. He said, we had dinner last night. We've had several conversations. He said, everything's great. We're fine. We're ready to go. The European team, although on paper not nearly as talented as the American team, has won 9 of the last 12 Ryder Cups. And there will not be many fans from Europe that are able to fly in and travel to Wisconsin to see this event. So it'll be certainly a pro-U.S. crowd. But it's amazing to me, in watching the Ryder Cup through the years, the amount of clutch putts the Europeans make, whether it's a 10-footer or a 50-footer. It's unbelievable how well they putt during the Ryder Cup, and that's going to be certainly a key for the USA in this competition. A couple of other notes out there. Notre Dame quarterback Jack Cohn is going against Wisconsin. Well, that's who he played for a while. Now he faces Wisconsin this week. He said that's going to be weird. Purdue wide receiver David Bell had a concussion. He was in concussion protocol. He stayed down on the field for several minutes before he was carted off in the game against Notre Dame. His status for this weekend is unclear. Ben Roethlisberger in the NFL, pectoral injury. It will affect his preparation for Sunday's game, according to Mike Tomlin, the head coach. The NFL is going to host an international combine in London October the 12th. 50 athletes from 14 countries will be participating, which I think is kind of interesting that they are doing that. And then real quick, as far as the SEC, the weekly honors that they handed out, Matt Corral at Ole Miss, the offensive player of the week, the first player ever from the SEC to have three touchdown passes and four rushing touchdowns in a game. Counted for seven touchdowns, and he ran for 68 yards and four touchdowns. He threw for 335 yards. He was 21-31. And I heard somebody ask the question, who's the best quarterback in the SEC? Is it Will Rogers or Matt Corral? No contest. Not even close. In fact, I wouldn't have Rogers number two. I'd probably put Bryce Young there. But anyway, Matt Corral has just been brilliant for them. The defensive players of the week, Alabama's Will Anderson, 3.5 tackles for loss. Georgia's Nolan Smith, who had 8 tackles and 1.5 sacks, and he forced a fumble against South Carolina. Then defensive lineman was B.J. Ojulari at LSU, 2.5 sacks in their win. And then the freshman was Adonis Mitchell, wide receiver, Georgia, 4 catches, 77 yards, and a touchdown. So those are our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters. Let's hear now from Cody Burns. Cody Burns, Tennessee wide receivers coach. He visited with the Knoxville Quarterback Club on yesterday, and he talked about, hey, when you go to a place like Tennessee, it's games like this that you really look forward to.
And obviously you come here to Tennessee to play games like Florida, right? So at the other place that I came from is about 3 schools. I'm assuming here pretty much the same. The Floridas, the Georgias, the Alabamas, those are the teams that you really want to come here to beat. And that's why I love being in SEC, because you get a chance to compete in those games. And so I'm looking forward to the challenge at hand. Obviously, Florida's a really good opponent, a really good team. Had a couple of first-round picks last year. Seem to reload every single year. And it's our job to go out there and really compete. And not only compete, but try to go out there and win the game and shock the world. Because outside of this room, there's not a lot of people that will give us a chance. But as long as we believe with our team, within our coaches, we got a chance to go shock the world is what we're going to try to do.
There you go. Want to shock the world. That's what Tennessee's going to try to do. Tennessee tight ends caught 9 passes against Pittsburgh. Jacob Warren's got a couple of touchdown passes this year. Burns was asked, the tight end's ability to catch passes, does that help the wide receivers in the passing game?
Yes, sir, 100%. Tight ends in this day and age are really what everybody's trying to do is play in what we call 11 personnel. Get a tight end on the field that can line up and he can block. He can also be a passing threat. And to answer your question, it does take stress off the receivers when you do have a tight end that's a threat as far as catching the ball out of the backfield 100%. So that's really going to help out the passing game as we continue throughout the season.
So Tennessee has been tight-lipped about who the quarterback will be against Florida. They were tight-lipped about who the quarterback would be against Tennessee Tech. So one creative person in the audience decided to ask Cody Burns this: which quarterback do the wide receivers prefer?
Yeah, see, I knew this was coming. I knew it was coming. Yeah. That's a great question. That's a great question. I'll tell you this, and because me being a former quarterback, I do know that playing quarterback is the hardest position to play, I think, in all sports. Because when everything goes good, you get all the praise. When everything goes bad, it's all on the quarterback. And so I tell my guys, I do not care who's playing quarterback. We got to make sure we're right. We got to make sure that everything we do is crisp, is clean, and that way that it makes it easy for those quarterbacks, whoever may be playing, to take some stress off of those guys. So with that being said, they're going to go out there and fight for whoever's playing quarterback.
We've seen Tennessee quarterbacks miss an awful lot of deep throws, mostly Joe Milton, but Hendon Hooker's missed some too. So Burns was asked about what Tennessee can do to connect on some of those long balls.
We're going to get there. And I think that the theme with this season, right, is if we can connect on a few of those balls, whether it be overthrows, whether it be a drop here or there, if we connect on those throws, it's a different season already. We feel really good about where we are. And so it's just time on task. It's working those situations, working those deep balls over and over and over again. And eventually they're going to hit, and hopefully, and we plan on it being this week.
And also from Cody Burns, he was asked, did the wide receivers read the defenses a lot during the course of their route running?
A lot of things that we do, we're reading on the run. So that's part of really growing. So that's a great question. A lot of offenses, you typically just run a route. You say, hey, you run a slant, or hey, you run a fade. Well, in this system that we have, just about on every single play, most of these guys have an option on what route they run based off of the defensive look. And so that takes time on task and growing. And obviously, we throughout the summer didn't name a quarterback. So whenever you have multiple quarterbacks and multiple receivers going with different quarterbacks, that chemistry is still not there. And so that's why I think you'll see us get better every single week throughout the season, because that timing and that chemistry will come along.
And I'll be curious to see if he's right about that, if that passing game will become sharper and sharper as the season goes, as the quarterbacks and the receivers get more on the same page. All right, it was Cedric Tillman that said recently that the wide receivers don't block. Well, Cody Burns was asked if Tillman was correct in saying that Tennessee's receivers are not asked to block.
Yes, sir. So we do, in our scheme, we do ask our receivers to block, not a whole lot, because we do what everybody else in the country is doing, RPOs, right? So run pass options. So just about on every single run play, you'll see the receivers running routes and the quarterback has a read that he's going through. And so you're not going to necessarily see receivers blocking every single play, and like you have in the past in old school I formation football. It's a good question.
Comments from Cody Burns, Tennessee's receivers coach. He was at the quarterback club, and interesting comments about his group. So we'll see if Tennessee's receivers, and here's another key, can Tennessee's receivers beat press coverage? Florida is well known for getting the cornerbacks in your face, and you got to beat them. And Tennessee has had trouble doing that from time to time. So that'll be a challenge for Tennessee's wideouts as they go against the Gators defense Saturday night.
We head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. Jimmy, it seems like we were catching up with this guy just last week.
Duly noted. Yes. Pat Dooley with the Duly Noted podcast. He was a longtime columnist with the Gainesville Sun, has covered the Gators for many, many years. Pat, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you, Jimmy?
We're doing fine. Thanks for joining us. I do want to ask you, so what was more impressive to you in the Florida-Alabama game? Was it the fact that Florida rallied from a 21-3 deficit, or the way they ran the football against Alabama for 245 yards?
Well, to me, it was running of the football. I mean, teams just don't do that to Alabama. And that was what Florida knew they were going to have to do this year to be an effective team. They were going to have to be a running team. And they were able to do it, you know. And that was without their best runner, who was Anthony Richardson. They were able to do it. And that told me, when you consider that Florida went for 256, I think it was, and Alabama got less than 100, that Florida controlled the line of scrimmages, which you never see anybody do on both sides. So, yeah. I mean, it was. I think that's why the Gator fan base is kind of like optimistic, like, hey, you know what? This thing is maybe going in the right direction. We may be able to figure this out, and we'd like a shot at Alabama again. Of course, you know what? Anytime you want Bama, it never ends up good.
Pat, before the game, was that you I saw doing backflips, or was that Anthony Richardson?
I did a couple, but the cameras weren't on. So, no, but he's, I mean, that's the thing. You know, that's where we're looking at that, and we're going, but he can't play. They were just petrified that if he gets hurt, because, look, their season is only going to be X without him, and it could be Y with him. So, their concern is that he goes out, plays in the game, you know, tweaks it when it's already got a slight injury, not any real damage, but they were afraid he was going to get hurt and they could lose him for 6 weeks. Now, you know, and again, I do get it from the standpoint of this wasn't the end of the world game. You know, you didn't have to win this game. If you won it, great. And a lot of great things were going to come from it. But if you don't win this game, you're still in it for everything you want to go get. And I think they were worried that they had to take that approach. I don't, to be honest with you, I don't necessarily agree with it, but that was the approach they took.
Do you think Anthony Richardson takes over at quarterback, or did Emory Jones show you enough against Alabama that Florida can win the East Division with Jones at quarterback?
I think they need both these guys to be playing. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be the perfect situation. Emory knows the offense better. He knows what he's doing. You saw that he has some skills that he did some good things in the game, made some good throws, certainly ran the ball well, and always seems to get 2 yards more than you think he's going to get. So I give him credit. And then, you know, I think if you can play them both and manage it properly, that's the tough thing, is managing two guys like that the right way. They seem to get along great from everything we're seeing. But the question is, can you manage them in terms of when to put them in? Put them in, you know, obviously you put in one of them and he throws a pick. Oh, how could you put him in? You put the wrong guy in. So, yeah, but I think they need them both to win. I really do.
Pat, back to the pregame backflips. Did you do those with flip-flops on or without?
No, I had a full tuxedo on, actually.
Oh, even more impressive. And speaking of impressive, what do you think it meant to Emory Jones to have the game that he had? I mean, just him as an individual and his growth as a player, what do you think it meant to him to finish the game as he did?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it was surprising because, you know, this was his third start, and it took it seemed like he struggled the first two games with a little bit of nerves and a little bit of dealing with being the starter. And he, you know, in game three got a little better. Now you would think in game four he'll even be better than that. So I think it's just going forward, it's just going to help him tremendously. He knows that he went toe-to-toe with the number one team in the country and, you know, lost by 2 points. So, you know, as the only quarterback. So now the great thing for where if you're Florida and if you're Dan Mullen is you know Emory's going to start. But at any point, you can bring in Richardson, and they got a freak. They're going to be freaking out on the other side. Well, is this the play where he runs it? Is this the play where he passes it? That's what they want to get to, that point where their offense is just kind of a juggernaut. I mean, they scored 29 the other night, but that's not exactly juggernaut.
They had the missed extra point. They go for two in the tie, and it was just simply a disaster. What was your reaction when you saw the play transpire as it did?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like the call. I always think you should have two or three two-point conversion plays ready that are, you know, they don't have to be trick plays, but they got to be plays you kind of hold on to that you know they'll work based on everything they're doing. You got to make good calls there. I didn't think it was a particularly good call, but again, they've been running the ball without any problem. And now Dan says that two different guys missed signals, whether it was a blocker and Emory. I mean, I think Emory was supposed to pull it, to be honest with you. But, you know, it's not the play I'd run on with the game on the line, personally.
I guess Pat Dooley with Dooley Noted, his podcast, which you can catch. I want to ask you this, Pat, about the running backs, and they certainly were effective against Alabama. How good do you think the Florida stable of running backs is?
Well, it's kind of interesting in that the guys that are the five stars are not the best players. And it's pretty clear when you watch these guys play that you know, Damian Pierce and Malik Davis and Naquan Wright have just kind of pulled away. And again, I think a little bit of that is being in an offense where you know what's going on. You've been in the offense in Pierce's case, 4 years, Davis's case, 4 years. These guys know what they're doing and have been pretty good. And then the 2 5 stars in Lingard and DeMarcus Bowman who just come in to mop up. I mean, that's basically it. So I know that Lingard wasn't happy. He tweeted something out. He wasn't happy with how much playing time he's been getting. And we knew that was going to be an issue, you know, this year with 5 quality running backs back there. But I mean, I love their running back room. The guys don't get tired. I mean, I think Malik Davis had 86 yards and he only carried it 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ball's not heavy, I know, but still you wear down and that kind of a deal. So it is a really good – we thought it would be the strength of this team, but the question was, guys, whether that offensive line would make it matter. And so far it has.
So Alabama scores 21 points right off the bat, first 3 possessions. And then they scored, 10 the rest of the game. Was that a case of Florida's defense really stepping up?
Yeah, they did. They played a lot better. I mean, one of the touchdowns was short field when they had a pick, but the other two were full drives. And then Also, Florida had like that 99-yard drive, and that took a lot of time off the clock. It makes it harder. I think sometimes on offenses get a little panicky when they can't get the ball back. But there's no question that Florida's defense started playing at a higher level. And, you know, they got a couple of really tough – and, again, every pass interference call is total – I mean, there are about 9 calls a year that you know are pass interference, and about the rest of them are all 50-50. And a lot of them went against Florida, and I know that Gator fans are upset about that. But, you know, one of them, to be honest with you, I was one of the 9. It was definitely pass interference. The one on Elam was questionable, but they started playing a little better in terms of getting their feet underneath them and playing a tight press coverage, which Florida played a lot of that press coverage in the game. But what they would do is they would drop off of it sometimes that allowed Alabama to hit a lot of short passes. So they started playing more press coverage and taking that away. Alabama really didn't try to go over the top very much like they usually do.
Pat, is there anybody that played for Florida against Alabama that may not be able to go this weekend?
Well, as far as we know, everybody checked out okay. And I would expect Anthony Richardson to play as well this week. As far as I know, I mean, but again, they're notorious for hiding injuries from us. I will tell you that.
Some things are constant.
Yeah. Yeah.
and at more than one location. Your impressions on Tennessee? Have you been able to see the Vols much at all?
Yeah, I watched. I watched their first 2 games. I watched the Pitt game for the most part. I definitely watched the Bowling Green game because that was like a Thursday night, right? So, yeah. You know, I did not see any of their game this week, I must confess. But, I mean, I like watching their offenses. It seems to be better, and obviously the quarterback situation with Milton hurt / benched. You guys can tell me that better than anybody, and the kid from Virginia Tech being in there. But, you know, if you look at the stats, they aren't very good. I think they're 10th in offense. That's not what they brought Josh Heupel in for, and I'm sure that eventually as they get healthier quarterback and they will be able to resolve some of those problems. But, and you guys know the answer to this better than I do. And my question I keep asking myself is everybody got in the transfer portal from Tennessee. What are they playing with? I mean, I guess they got a lot of guys in the transfer portal, but every time you look up, it goes, yeah, he played for Tennessee last year. We know Toe, you know, of course, was here. I don't know how they're even pacing it together with the scholarship numbers.
Well, the numbers that were mentioned by the head coach, we dispute. He said they had 71 on scholarship. I counted 77. Vince Ferrar counted 78. So they're either playing with 77 or 78. They had about 10 they brought in from the transfer portal, and they signed about 20. So that took care of about 30 of the players that had departed. So.
But again, it's not a lot of guys who played, you know, with them, and
right.
It's going to be a learning process. And I would think Tennessee fans are going to be patient, like all SEC.
Oh
fans.
Yeah, no doubt. not always, but sometimes there are teams that play Alabama and they have this post-Alabama letdown. Whether it's because they won a close, you know, they got the brains beat out, or they lost a close game, or they won. Do you think that's an issue for Florida at all, having difficulty coming back after playing Alabama?
Yeah, well, that's going to be the big question I have. I mean, that game had so much hype, so much. The crowd was really into it. They'll be into it. It's 7 o'clock game, so they'll be lubed up for this one. But, you know, it won't have the same intensity. You know, obviously Florida's beaten Tennessee, 15 out of 16? And sometimes it's kind of hard to get up. I mean, I want to take them back to this crowd back to the old days when the game, this place would be on fire because it was Tennessee was coming to town. Hadn't felt that way for a while, but they should feel that way because who knows, they may see a Hail Mary.
Yeah. Florida, I've seen favored by between 16 and 22 points. Do you think that's pretty accurate?
That's a lot of points. I'm not sure Florida's offense is going to be that kind of offense where they score those kind of numbers. I think they're going to be more of a control offense, and they may win out. I mean, I'm not saying they can't, but the thing is, I can see them winning a lot of games, 34, you know, 35 to 21 or 15 or whatever, you know, the rest of this year. So I would stay away from that if I was thinking about taking Florida and giving the points. That's a lot of points. I think the last I saw was 20 and a half.
Yeah. Hey, well, Pat, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate that outlook on the Florida Gators. Look forward to the game this weekend.
All right, we'll see you guys. Always great talking to you.
Thanks,
thank
Pat.
You, Pat. Pat Dooley, formerly with the Gainesville Sun, longtime columnist there, now with the Dooley Noted podcast.
That's right, D-O-O-L-E-Y, noted. Yeah. And, Jimmy, the football conversation continues as we look forward to hour number two.
We do. Vince Ferrara will be with us to talk about that, and we've got a guest, Steve Russell.
That's right.
Who's going to join us as well to further break down the Florida Gators.
So that's all coming up. Hour number two of Sports Talk. Stay with us on 99.1, The Sports Animal.